This is your Day X World War III update. Here's what I know. Right now, it is very quiet, a little bit too quiet. And you know what that means. In the current global conflict environment, that always means that big plans are about to be hatched. Now, the reason for this is because there's limitations on manpower and materiel with respect to the forces that are active in these wars around the world. You can only do a big arrow attack if you have some time to prepare for it, which is usually why it's preceded with some reprieve or some reduced intensity fighting on the other fronts. And this is kind of what we're seeing in the last 48 hours. We're still seeing some light bombardment of Lebanon, but it's very targeted and it's far more limited. And it's not like wholesale destruction that we're seeing about a week ago. So what that tells me is that it's very likely that Israel indeed is getting ready or is in the final stages of executing this long-anticipated retaliatory strike against Iran, which I presume is going to require the full commitment of either their air force or their military in general, because we don't know if it's coming from the air force yet. And we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But you're never going to expect to see a big offensive emerge from a highly frenetic news environment. Okay, it just never happens, whether it's the war in Ukraine. There's always some reprieve, okay, where things are shoring up and things are consolidating. Then all of a sudden, a big attack emerges. And I think that's what we're going to see with the Iranian situation. So when there is a period of relative calm, that is when the attack is going to emerge. It is going to emerge from that environment, because that's the only environment it can emerge from when we're talking about limited amounts of resources and manpower. So right now, the situation is such that most airlines are avoiding Iranian airspace. If you look on flight radar, they're avoiding it like the plague. In particular, the western part of Iran, this is, of course, where a lot of the nuclear facilities are located, and where the attack, in whatever form it may come, will come from. So we're also seeing that Qatar, who of course plays both sides of the fence very well and acts as an intermediary for both sides of this conflict, I believe they're also host to the largest U.S. base in the Middle East, their airways are suspending flights to and from Iraq, Iran, and Lebanon until further notice due to security situation in the region. So it appears as though this attack could really come at any moment. And it's going to come after a period of calm. So if you see things start to calm down, that's when you know it's like the tsunami. Before the tsunami comes, the water gets pulled out first. Like an archer who has to pull back the bow, and pick your analogy, that's what's happening. Now, the question is, what is Israel going to do? Because there's a lot of talk about this leak, and the more I think about the leak, the more I think that is just 100% contrivance. It is purely for the purpose of misdirection, and let me tell you why. It has come to my attention that the information in this leaked document, and I in fact knew this, I just had it corroborated by other analysts who've looked at it, the information inside this geospatial intelligence package, otherwise known as signals intelligence, where they essentially are able to derive the planning of a military on the basis of what satellite imagery says they're up to, it starts to look as though that there's nothing that was in this document that the Iranians would not have already known already. And when you pair this with the fact that Israel tends not to be transparent in their offensive, in fact, they're highly unorthodox in their methods, as was demonstrated by the pager attack, for them to be telegraphing that they're going to do an airstrike to the degree that they are makes everybody suspicious that they're going to do that. Anybody with, you know, common sense. And of course, if the Russians are in good with the Iranians and the Russians are as good as at intelligence as they are, they're absolutely conveying this to the Iranians. Okay? Of course, they have a fine line to walk with so many of their citizens residing in Israel, but I would presume that in an attempt to somewhat manage the situation, they would forward whatever assessment of this intelligence to the Iranians, who I'm sure they can figure it out on their own. For example, you have all of this focus right now and fixation on the skies, that the Israeli Air Force is getting ready to do a attack using their stealthy aircraft and their air-launched ballistic missiles against Iran. In fact, this was the basis of the leaked document. The thesis of the leaked document was that this is exactly what Israel was going to do. Now, I think that this document was likely leaked by the Pentagon with the green light from the Israelis. I think that the Israelis wanted this. For starters, it gives them an excuse to defer the retaliatory strike a little bit more until they're properly ready. And it also, because they understand that they're probably going to break off more than that they can chew, but it also gives them more cover and allows for greater misdirection of the Iranians to continuously focus on an attack that might be coming from the sky. Whereas, for all we know, there are fifth column elements inside Iran, sleeper cells, Mossad inspired or on the Mossad payroll, sleeper cells who are getting ready to do some widespread sabotage operations. And if we know the unorthodox methods of the Israelis, it could come in many forms: exploding electronics, kinetic cyber attacks. Anything is very possible. So it really starts to look as though this whole thing is just a ruse, a feint, in order to take attention away. And they double down on it. And the Israelis are never this transparent, okay? For example, the IDF minister, Yoav Gallant, was at an Israeli Air Force base recently, and he said, "After we carry out a strike on Iran, everyone will understand the effort you, the pilots and technical crew, have put into preparation and training." Again, making everybody anticipate that this attack is going to come from the skies. If anybody is going to do something that is completely unexpected and out of sorts, it's going to be Israel. Recall when they took out Nasrallah. It was during the UN assembly, and it was during a time when they said that we wanted ceasefires. And that's what Pezeshkian, the Iranian president, had an issue with, is because there was, according to the United States and Israel, a plan on the table for a ceasefire deal with Hezbollah. Well, they were able to smoke them out of their holes, and then we all know what happened. A decapitation strike happened. So I would not believe anything or any sort of show that the Israelis are currently putting on if we want to know what's coming. Now, it may just be that. And if it is just that, then we know it's probably going to be de-escalatory. And the Israelis know that they're not going to be able to fight such a war without the help of the Americans. Now, of course, the thinking is that they want to pull America into the war. So whatever attack they do, it has to be somewhere in between not so severe that it's going to result in their immediate defeat. We're talking about thousands of ballistic missiles launched on warning by the Iranians, but it has to elicit enough of an Iranian response to warrant the United States getting involved and giving them that window that they can prepare for a broader war within the region. So they have to do a very targeted strike, but will elicit an Iranian response that's more severe than the one on October 1st. If they want to bring the United States into the war, it has to, but it has to be somewhere between there and their strategic defeat, okay? So, and this is where it gets tricky. Now, in addition to that, they're also saying, the Israelis are saying, that their operation in Iran may affect other countries within the region. Now, what could that possibly mean? That almost rules out any kind of assassination, right? And of course, this could all just be misdirection. Everything they say is completely suspect. In fact, I'm not even really willing to take it to the bank at all. But let's just say it is. Then, of course, they're talking about airspace, right? Using other countries' airspace. The only other thing I could think of is maybe some sort of radioactive fallout blowing somewhere into another country. I'm not sure where the prevailing winds are going to blow, if it's going to blow into countries which are not friendly to the Israelis or not. Could they be referring to utilizing an electromagnetic pulse that might actually black out parts of power grids of other surrounding countries? That's a possibility as well, okay? If they're talking about cyber attack, or, and I'm not sure how interconnected the Iranian grid is with surrounding countries, you know, it could be something to do with that. It could be something to do with shipping lanes, things of that nature. So there's plenty of different ways this could potentially go. But the Iranians are saying that if the Israelis inflict major damage, then their response could include and would not be limited to a wave of up to 1,000 ballistic missiles and escalated attacks by Iranian proxy groups within the region. Now, we've seen 200 ballistic missiles. Theoretically, if the Israelis have two THAAD batteries there right now and maybe a few hundred interceptors, and with all of their other missile defense capability, David Sling, and Arrow system, you know, maybe they're able to take out 300-400 of those. So you have 600 warheads, and if they're actually armed with serious ordnance this time and not just a bunch of decoys, that spells trouble, especially considering the Iranians have simulated attacks on the Dimona nuclear power plant, although I don't think they're going to play that card just yet. But the Iranians are in a difficult spot because they must presume when they see those planes on their radars, if they can even see them, or if they see those missiles inbound, they must presume the worst. And that means that they're likely going to be in a conventional launch on warning situation of sorts, that either you use it or you lose it. Now, Iran is a massive country, and unless the Israelis are getting the help of a lot of their allies or they're borrowing planes and pilots and money, which is essentially the same thing as the Americans partaking in the actual offensive directly, unless they're doing that, you know, you're going to need hundreds of planes. We're talking like 500 warplanes, like F-35s, F-16s, F-15s, you know, the ones that can fly farther and hold a lot more ordnance. You're going to need just tons of planes. You're going to need bombers, right? Stealth bombers, B-2 bombers. You're going to need all this stuff in order to really do a dent. But if the Iranians assume that their strategic defeat is imminent, then they have to launch the biggest possible attack that they can muster. And I don't know how they're going to be able to discern whether it is a strategic attack, an existential attack or not, unless they're given intelligence, unless they have intelligence, or they're given intelligence by the Russians. Maybe the Russians are going to say, hey, we know what Israel's going to do. It's going to be a big attack, but it's not going to be that big. So you can kind of tamp down your response just a little bit to buy us a little bit more time here. This thing doesn't have to escalate to 100, okay, right away. So that is what I foresee happening. Now, the IRGC is actually threatening a ground invasion of Israel. And when you think about it, I don't think Israel is prepared to defend against a ground invasion, okay? I mean, you got to think about all the fortifications that are put in place in different parts of Ukraine. As far as I know, Israel doesn't really have a lot of that, okay? Maybe they've mined certain areas. Maybe they have some. I don't think I've ever seen a dragon teeth in Israel. I could be wrong about that. And I don't doubt that they have a plan for these sorts of things. But when you're talking about overwhelmed by tens of thousands of troops, I don't think it would be, especially when you're so preoccupied in other parts of the map, and especially when there's so many places that these problems can arise and you're dealing with your own domestic situation and you're dealing with, you know, constant drone bombardments hitting Netanyahu's bedroom window with pinpoint precision, seemingly undetected, or at least seemingly undetected, because maybe they wanted that to happen on purpose to provide more justification for a greater retaliation against Iran. It's hard to say, but nonetheless, the possibility for overwhelm is very real. And as sometimes the craziest plans, just like we've seen on October 7th, actually work because they're so crazy, right? Work in the sense that they were able to take over a military base and, you know, obviously killed a lot of civilians at the same time. But in terms of their military objectives, I think they were actually surprised themselves to see how successful they were, according to them, of course, in the achieving those objectives. Because sometimes when you rest on your laurels, and I've always said, you know, here in the West, we don't have to build bunkers and we don't have to build down and we don't have to build defenses because our offensive is so good. And because we've been ruling the roost for so long, whereas all these other countries who've had to build these fortifications underground and prepare in a defensive posture, they're ready for that. But we just presume it will never happen, which is why, really, when you think about it, it's the best plan. Because what are they going to do, right? Are they going to nuke themselves, okay? When you got tens of thousands of people fighting in the streets, I mean, it would be absolutely chaotic. Now, the logistics of all of that, you know, it seems like an impossibility, especially when you're under heavy suppression fire from the U.S. Navy and the Israeli Air Force and all the other Israeli Air Forces in the region to be able to bring in 100,000 troops into Israel and have a logistical supply chain that's actually going to work. It seems unbelievable that they could accomplish something like that, but you just never know, right? These are guys who are used to fighting with very little. And mind you, I don't think they have potentially the same degree of organization and control and regimentation over these militias to do a concerted ground attack like that. But this is exactly what the commander-in-chief of the IRGC is threatening, in addition to the deployment of thousands of ballistic missiles. So any day now, shit's going to go down. It's just a matter of when. Oil is basically trading within range. Gold still breaking records, still in that range-bound state right now of around $2,750. But what people need to realize about gold is that it is, in fact, much higher than it was, than it even looks nominally. Because the U.S. dollar has actually been going up relative to other currencies. For example, right now it's like $1.40 Canadian dollars can be exchanged for $1 American. Usually it's closer to about $1.30. And right now the USD index is getting close to $1.05 or $1.05. So, you know, that was much higher than it was when gold was at like $2,200. And the USD index was one. So you really have to add another 5% on. So in real terms, that means that the price of gold, you're looking at about 4% more than it actually is now, which would put it at around $2,850, $2,870, you know, in like real terms relative to where the US dollar index has been range bound for the last year or so. So, I mean, you know, gold is just getting scary, scary, scary in terms of where that's going. So I think when we see a calm, and if we see a protracted period of calm on the Middle Eastern front, that's how you know shit's going to go down. And that's how you know shit's going to go down in Ukraine. Right now, they're now talking about, and they've approved, in fact, $50 billion with a B, dollars, additional dollars. And every week you hear is another $400 million, another $1.2 billion. They've now approved another $50 billion for Ukraine to build out its drone program and its own domestic ballistic missile program, so it can start regularly doing routine bombardments deep inside Moscow. Where did they get this money? Well, they're very clever. But not so clever, and this is why gold is going up. This is why the US dollar is on its last legs. they decided that they're going to skim this off the interest, off the seized assets of Russia, which I believe total somewhere in the 300 billion range or something like that. So they're going to skim the interest. Well, what does that really mean? Take the interest. You're taking the purchasing power, okay? Because we know that $300 billion in 2020 is like $220 billion today in terms of what it can actually buy. In 10 years, it's going to be like $50 billion probably, you know, at the rate of inflation and inflationary black swan events around the world that could inflow between now and then. I mean, we're talking about hyperinflation possibly. So that money could be virtually worthless. So they're essentially stealing the Russians' assets, but they're doing it in a way where they're not really stealing it. They're stealing its purchasing power by stealing the interest that's accumulated on that debt. So it's very clever. Unfortunately, the international markets are going to view this as stealing. And of course, this is going to cause people to be very concerned about the integrity of the global reserve currency, the US dollar and the euro. And they're going to start to move to alternatives like gold, like silver. And so the more they mess with Russia's money like this, every time they try to skim some money off the Russia, you're going to see the price of gold go straight up. Okay, this is arguably why some people are saying that gold is going up at all because of this scheme. And now you're seeing BRICS start to really burgeon in its relationship. And it's in its infancy, obviously, but it looks like it ain't going anywhere. And it's only going up and up and up. And what that means is the death knell for the US dollar as a reserve currency. So this is another reason why the price of gold is going up into perpetuity, it would appear. So anyways, election stuff. I think we talked enough about... Okay, just so you know, on the southern Lebanese front, Israel is taking a lot of losses. They're not admitting to all of these losses. It's one of the most closed-circuit totalitarian societies on the planet. You have Israel, who's masquerading as democratic, when really it's a colony. It is totalitarian to the core. They have, they're basically putting all kinds of restrictions on the freedom of the press. Same thing in Ukraine, where they're pulling guys off the street who are just, you know, on their way to work or walking with their families, stuffing them into vans, sending them to the front line without the appropriate gear in order to die for a NATO alliance that doesn't even recognize them yet. And of course, they're under military dictatorship right now because Zelensky technically is not the president, okay? So you have a military dictatorship, a totalitarian regime, in my personal opinion, which is also a colonialist state. You have Iran, who they're trying to, via a fifth column color revolution, if you will, put in a puppet monarchy, and they're going to call it a democracy, okay? So it's just a hypocrisy, you know, with the West. And, you know, one thing I agree with Trump on with respect to this, and I know he's just saying that in passing, he's a very Mercurian candidate, meaning that you can never really take his word for anything because, you know, on the one hand, he's saying, hey, we can't be meddling with Iran's affairs. On the other hand, he's saying, yeah, we need to give everything the Israelis need to go and destroy their nuclear program, which he knows will end in a regional war, okay? So anyways, well, the thing I agree with him is that when he says that we can't be getting involved in other people's affairs, but I think he's just saying that. I think he knows full well that he's going to give Netanyahu anything he wants, and I think that's best evidence when you have Donald Trump, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Ben Shapiro standing there against the wall with the yarmulkes on doing the thing. And, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, this is the world we live in. And this war, it was written in the stars. It's going to come by hook or by crook. Now, I must also say, Iran has seemingly given Israel a way out. They have said, according to the New York Times, if you can believe them, that Al-Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, has ordered the armed forces to prepare for war with Israel, prepare for full-blown war with Israel. He's ordered the armed forces to prepare, but only if Israel decides to launch a large-scale attack on Iran. Again, going back to whether or not the intelligence, the message is going to be sent, and the Iranian foreign minister is no longer communicating with the United States. So this has to come through some other third party, Qatar, Russia, who knows. But they've basically said that they are prepared and preparing several different levels of response. Okay, so the scope of these responses is going to depend on the severity of the attack levied by Israel. If Israel launches a limited strike, then, and that could maybe be against warehouses, storage facilities with weapons, which doesn't really make sense to me. Why would you even do that? What's the point of even doing that? Because, of course, Iran is so huge and they have so many of these things, it just doesn't seem to make sense at all. Because as you guys know, I don't even think Israel, I think Israel already won in terms of the decapitation strikes, in terms of all the chaos that they've caused. They can walk away from this and still, you know, at least in the public's mind, their public's mind, come away as winners. Because even they claim that, oh yeah, these Iranian missiles, they didn't hit anything, even though everybody knows they did. Anyways, Iran may tamp down their response if the attack only targets these sites. However, if they do target oil industry, energy sector, nuclear facilities, or senior officials, then the response is going to be total war. All right. Now, let's quickly share a message that I got from a South Korean viewer. They claim the following. I'm currently living in South Korea in an area called Gosagong, about 40 kilometers south of the DMZ, that's the demilitarized zone, on the east coast. Today, my wife and I went further towards the border for an ultrasound at a clinic. We were both blown away by the sheer number of convoys heading toward the border. You could see locals in their farm field standing in shock. She has never seen this much movement before in terms of vehicles. We had went back to the ultrasound and the appointment on the way back, and there were still more vehicles traveling north. We're not only talking about military vehicles, but couches. I'm not sure what he means by couches. Is that a military term? Couches as well. I truly hope that South Korea looks at their constitution and see peace is the only option, yada, yada, yada. So it doesn't look like it, because today a fire broke out at a Busan U.S. military base in South Korea. The cause is unknown. According to the Yonhap news agency, the fire broke out at the 55th Supply Depot in name I can't pronounce, and it was a pretty big fire. There's video of it. And allegedly, the Russians are indeed helping the Houthis with satellite coordinates to help target ships in the Red Sea. If that is true, and of course, helping the Houthis is helping the Iranians, right? And helping the entire axis of resistance. That entails a degree of coordination which is more evidence of our Day X hypothesis, because that putatively means that the Iranians and the Russians indeed do have a high-level strategic alliance if the Russians are indeed providing information to the Houthis, and that's according to the Wall Street Journal. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth. It could just be trying to create a link between the Russians and the IRGC just to get more justification for, you know, creating that whole axis of evil, North Korea, Russia, Iran, China, of course, who's in there as well. I'm telling you, man. Wow. It's times like these that are most nerve-wracking, when not much is going on and it's slow news day. That's when things, big plans are being hatched. Now, in terms of the election, all I have to say is this. The U.S. Department of Defense is indeed preparing for widespread civil unrest. And I'm going to tell you why. It would appear on the surface, if you're a person who uses a lot of social media and you're trying to gauge this general sentiment out there in the public, it does appear that the preferred choice by the average Joe, I mean, as far as we can tell, because the algorithms have a confirmation bias, so it's very difficult to know what's what. You almost have to jump into, you almost have to create a fake profile where you go and you like a bunch of Kamala Harris stuff to really start to see Because if you're just being fed a lot of the same stuff, you're thinking it's going to be a blowout. I mean, Trump's going to completely destroy Kamala in this election. At least that's how it looks on social media. But there's a problem with that, right? And the problem is, if that's what it appears, then that's going to have the process of that kind of polarization by the algorithms. And there was a documentary about this that warned about how the algorithms are radicalizing people because they put you in a more refined and deeper echo chamber and thus creates more polarization between the two sides. There is a risk that it's not what it seems, okay? Now, I believe his name is Alan Lichtman. This guy predicted 9 out of the 10 last elections. Republicans or Democrats, he always picks them, even though himself, I'm pretty sure, what I can derive from his page, he's mostly a lefty, a Democrat, okay? Nonetheless, he predicted that Trump would win in 2016. He predicted the second Bush presidency. He predicted Reagan. I believe he must have predicted George Sr. as well. The only one he failed, and he really didn't fail, was Al Gore, George Bush in 2000, when he had the whole hanging Chad Florida incident. I can't believe I'm that old to remember that, but it's true. Essentially, a lot of people think that Gore actually won. I think technically he may have actually won that election, but it was too late. And you know, interestingly, and to the credit of, and perhaps it's just a sign of the times, there was no crazy, you know, talk of civil war at the time. Sure, there probably was some, you know, some stuff that wasn't being widely publicized online because the internet was in its infancy. But, you know, Gore just said, okay, we'll do a recount. And, you know, that was kind of the end of it. And then he lost. Anyways, that's kind of a sidebar. But nonetheless, this Alan Lichtman guy has essentially predicted every winner of the election since 1982. Now, yesterday he comes out and he says, yes, Kamala Harris is absolutely still going to win this election. And he says that, I don't say this from a place of preference, although I'm sure he would prefer she won because he's a Democrat, but he uses this system of 13 keys, okay? And he says that so long as nothing really damning happens between now and then, she's got it in the bag. And this seems really counterintuitive when you're looking at the social media, when you're looking at, I mean, I know a lot of people who've moved from the right to the left, but I can't say I've known really anybody who's moved to the left to the right except on the Palestinian issue. A lot of people aren't liking what they're seeing. There's a lot of Christian folk who aren't liking the death and destruction that they're seeing. And they're starting to question that, right? And they're starting to say, well, you know, if Trump is firmly aligned with that agenda, then I can't be affiliated with that. And maybe there's something there. But the majority of people I know over the last 4 years, they're starting to be moved to the right, right? So he is saying that she still has, I think, something like 12 of these keys of, or not, maybe not 12, is it? I think as long as she doesn't, as long as she has, was it 7 out of 13 keys, she's going to win. And he says right now, I think she's got like 9 and there's maybe a couple that are kind of ambiguous. But the problem with this is that when you have Elon Musk saying things like, this is going to be the last election if Kamala wins, which I think is just, you know, the pendulum swings both ways. It's just going to swing back. If she really blows it, you know, the pendulum's going to swing the other way. I just don't see a situation where she becomes an authoritarian despot. I know that people thought Obama was going to do that, and maybe I'll be wrong. I really don't care at this point who wins the election because I know it doesn't really matter. I mean, both sides are going to continue to print money. There's going to be some slight changes in domestic policy, and maybe the landscape of the culture war will shift a little bit. By and large, foreign policy ain't going to change. We're still going to be in world wars all over the place. No matter which one of these people is elected, we're still going to be printing money like there's no tomorrow. If both of them are elected, they're all going to make promises like Trump is talking about, mulling the eradication of income tax and replacing it with tariffs. But there's all kinds of, like, you know, I mean, that's the primary source of income. How are you going to service your $36 trillion in debt. People think, well, we're just going to inflate it away. Well, then get used to $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 gold if you think that we're going to inflate away the debt, because that's what's going to have to happen. So you might as well just get some of the precious metal stuff now while the getting is good. Now, the reason why I bring up Lichtman is because if this guy, who's called, I can't remember what his nickname is, but the Nostradamus or something like that, if he is this convinced that she is going to win on the basis of this system up till today, because I thought that maybe, okay, his prediction, it might have changed since the last time he made an appearance, read an article today, he's still adamant that she's going to win. If you got people like Musk and many people thinking, the algorithm has them thinking that Trump has this in the bag and there's no possible way they can lose unless they get cheated, you're going to see widespread civil unrest. And this is why the United States Department of Defense is indeed preparing for potential civil unrest ahead of the presidential election. We have military intelligence involvement. The Defense Intelligence Agency has been authorized to assist law enforcement in response to possible riots and legal violations. Lethal force may also be utilized. Assistance may involve the use of lethal force against protesters if deemed necessary. They're talking about Pentagon Directive number 5240.01. This is not the first time this has been enacted. This has been floating around the interwebs for the past couple weeks. I haven't brought it up because it's kind of a given. You know, it's something they've enacted in the past, so it's not like it's like, ooh, you know, they're going to start taking people off to the FEMA camps. It's no different than it's always been under these types of conditions, probably through COVID, through the George Floyd riots, through the January 6th stuff. All of this stuff was enacted. So anyways, many in the public do see the potential for a civil war as being quite high. Of course, what form that's going to take, it's going to look more like low intensity to moderate intensity conflict, terroristic incidents, you know, the street clashes that we've become accustomed to, but it could take on an uglier form as well. You may in fact start to see, because we're seeing a lot of animosity. When you think about, and it's really difficult because we're so used to it, when you think of some of the more controversial figures who make very inflammatory statements in the US government or the Canadian government for that matter, it's the same here, guys. But it wasn't like that 25 years ago, you know? When thinking of Gore and Bush, like just the nature of those exchanges was far more civil. It was just, you never seen the level of aggression and belligerence that you're seeing nowadays. And I don't think it would take much for that to morph into something physical and kinetic at this point in time. So for that reason, I would suggest that people take this opportunity, this 2 weeks, to just make sure all of your affairs are in order. I think there's still time if you want to order like a Jace medical kit, or if you want to fill up your gas tanks, fill up, just stock up on anything that you want to order online. There's still time to do that. And I think that, you know, really we're talking about a few months of uncertainty, because I actually think that if Trump wins, there'll be less social chaos than people think. I think it's going to be more in the other direction, because I think people are going to genuinely feel treated, because it seems, an emphasis on seems, because my algorithm could be biased, right? It seems like Trump's going to win. It does. I never said that before. I said that people were underestimating Kamala when she first came out, and I said, you're underestimating her, and sure enough, she rocketed ahead in the polls, but a lot of these polls are fake. Like this Poly Market nonsense, it's fake. It's people betting. It's not an actual poll. And you need a randomized sample of the population to have a poll, and then you need that by state and by county. And so you just really never know, okay? And actually, I would even say right now that Trump is, and this is going to seem crazy, but the people that you're starting to see rally around Trump, it's starting to look like he's the establishment pick. And you don't get in that kind of position, guys. You just don't. And people are going to say, well, they attempted to assassinate him. And I would say, you know, people who were off their meds, who were like the consequence of this crazy culture war frenzy, are the ones who attempted to do that. It wasn't the Iranians, okay? That's what they want us to think. But there's a reason why people like Lindsey Graham and all these people are rallying around the guy. And if you really think about it, has the immigration thing helped the Democrats this go around? It's completely destroyed their campaign. Because now you have people coming out who are, and I usually don't get political on the channel. I really don't give a fuck anymore. To be brutally honest, you know, I'm done putting up with people's shit telling me what I can and can't say. Okay, if you don't like it, then take a fucking hike. I don't care at this point. I really don't. You want me to sit here and pretend and not share my true thoughts about what I think about the situation? No, I'm not going to do that. So with Trump, I think it's a situation in that they actually, there's many elements within the deep state that want him to be president. And they're really playing it by, because they know Republican, Democrat, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. It's not going to change the end game, right? It's not going to change. They're still going to be moving, laundering the money in the same way. It's just, how can we appease the majority of people? We have to let the people win so they don't revolt. If 51% of people want Trump, give them Trump. Trump was there for 4 years. Did things fundamentally change that much? Not really. Did things get really crazy after he left because of the pandemic and all that? Yeah, it got really stupid. Trump derangement syndrome is dumb. It is dumb. But so is Kamala derangement syndrome, okay? But I think that a lot of these policies, if it is true, and I say if it is true that they're trying to bring in immigrants to vote, if it's true, it's backfired, right? It's totally backfired because now you have like maybe, what, 5 to 10% of people who might have voted Democrat, who are starting to see the writing on the wall. They've been pushing the other, and that overrides however many millions of votes you were able to bring in. So it makes you wonder then, in a 4D way, are the immigrants coming in to undermine the Harris campaign? I know it sounds crazy, but we like to think on this channel, and it's not illegal yet to think. But the way things are going, no matter who's elected, they're going to make thinking illegal because neither side wants to engage in any dialogue. And it's really, you know, do you want to get hit with the left or hit with the right hook? It's, you know, maybe some people's face, your face is tired of getting punched from this side. Okay, come on, just give it to us from the other side. Okay, you know, at the end of the day, man, it's all the same shit. It's all the same shit. Guy puts on a McDonald's uniform and everybody thinks like, I mean, that's the easiest. That's all you have to do to get elected president is go and work at McDonald's for a day. And I know Kamala's awkward and she's, but you know, there's Kamala derangement syndrome too. There really is. And I just think, you know what would be the greatest thing ever? To just to have Kamala and Trump sit down in a place with no moderators and have a conversation together. Wouldn't that be the most incredible thing ever? To just see those two have a conversation? And we can sit here and think about how it might go, but wouldn't that be the coolest thing ever? Really? What, I mean, what's preventing that from happening? Is it the Kamala campaign? Is it Trump? I don't know. I just want this shit to be over with. I want somebody to win. And I want there to be no civil war. So we can finally get some certainty about whether we're going to war in the Middle East or we're going nuclear in Europe. Both of those are coming. It's just a matter of which is coming first. That's what you're voting for. War in the Middle East. Because Trump, who has a hit on his head by the Iranians, they do technically have an arrest warrant out for Trump because of what he did with Soleimani. Thankfully, the COVID completely overshadowed that war, which was supposed to start then. But maybe the Chinese, maybe they leaked it because they wanted to stop the war. Makes you wonder, could they stop a war again with a virus? Or a massive cyber attack? What sort of black swan is going to emerge from the skies this time to throw a wrench in the plans of the globalists or the jingoists? Let me know in the comments section below. If you want to support the channel, Canadian company, go check out CanadianPreparedness.com. Use coupon code WW3Survival to get 13% off your entire order. And we got these in today. Check these out, Fernand the Fur Guy. These are, they're for women, but, you know, I mean, these ones aren't like the Blue Fox. We have, oh yeah, we got a shitload of Blue Fox. This is the Silver Fox. Real fur mitts, just in time for winter, guys, but don't wait because these are limited in stock. Every year, we only get a few in. They're handmade in Canada with the finest materials by a real French coureur de bois. This guy, 150 years ago, he would have had a canoe. He would have been out there trapping. He was probably, would have been in that movie, The Revenant. You would have seen him there. He would have been having all his pelts. He would be trading furs. And so we got the last fur trader alive right now, working with us at CanadianPreparedness.com. We got weapons. We got body armor. We got the best frickin' freeze-dried food money can buy. Everything. Things that you're not going to find anywhere else. All high-quality shit. Okay? Go check it out if you want to support the channel. I'm going to keep you apprised of everything I know as it comes across my desk. Take care, my friends.